January 6, 1988, Marsha Ripp and Chuck Coffey interviewing Mrs.
Alan H.
Berkman. Mrs. Berkman, do you mind if we call you
Selma? Call me Selma.
Selma, okay. Perhaps we can start with your immediate family. Maybe you can tell me about your mother and father, or brothers and sisters.
All right. My full name is Selma Wena Berkman. I was the fourth child, the last of them, born to Selma Lowenstein Wena and Eli Wena. I was born in Keltis, Texas, which is a sawmill town. And my father was a lumberman, and he and his partners had a sawmill, Angelina County Lumber Company, in Keltis, Texas. But when I was 6 weeks old, my parents realized that they had four Jewish children in a small Texas town with very few Jews around, and we moved to Shreveport, Louisiana, where both my parents had brothers and sisters there, and Temple was there, and there were better schools. So my father would commute once a week to the sawmill, but he had us in Shreveport because of the schooling and the Jewish education.
How about your brothers and sisters?
I'm the youngest of four. My brother Samson, named after my paternal grandfather, died at the age of 78 a year and a half ago in Dallas, Texas. And my sister Isabel Wena Kahn, died in 1964 in Dallas, Texas, and my sister Carol, C-A-R-O-L, Carol Wena Sandfield, is still living in Dallas with her husband, who's an architect, Max Sandfield. And I married Alan Berkman almost 50 years ago and moved to Pittsburgh from Dallas. I'm the only one that left Dallas.
Should we know something about your mother and father and their background?
I'll be happy to tell you, but I'll warn you that I've been doing family history, and I've picked up a lot of miscellaneous information that was important to me, and I thought it might be interesting to you. My father was Eli Wena. His father was Samson Wena, and his grandfather was Alias Wena. The names were handed down, Eli Samson. It's been broken already, that one. But his father came from Germany. And at the age of 20, on the boat coming over, he met a young girl named Caroline Forschheimer, F-O-R-S-C-H-E-I-M-E-R, who was being brought by her uncle. She and her sister and her brother were being brought by their uncle, who lived in Mississippi, to the United States. And he met this 18-year-old girl and apparently fell in love with her, because although his uncle, David Wena in Buffalo, New York, was bringing him to the United States, he stayed with his uncle 1 year in Buffalo and then went all the way down to Mississippi to marry my grandmother. And that's why my father was born in Mississippi, in Winona, Mississippi. I can take you back. Do you want me to go back of that? Or do you just want me to stay in that?
Go back. Go back.
All right. My paternal grandparents, we found in the Leo Beck Society in New York that my great-great-grandfather, I think it was named Wolf Wurm, W-U-R-M, and he was born in 1791 and was a soap and candle maker. And he was married to Rahm, R-A-H-M-E, which may be the German for Rosa. And she was born on March 24, 1790. These records in the Leo Beck Society had all these records. And in 1809, in Heinsheim, Germany, the Jews in Germany had been told they could take German names instead of Jewish names. So Wolf Wurm changed his name to Wolf Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R. And Wolf and Ron had three children. And their oldest, Elias, E-L-I-A-S, was my ancestor. And he was born June 3rd, 1805, in Heinsheim, Amt Mosbach. That's H-E-I-N-S-H-E-I-M. And the second word is A-M-T. And the third word is capital M-O-S-B-A-C-H, Germany. I won't go into his sisters and brothers, except that his brother, who was David, was the first of the family to come to the United States, and he's the one that brought my grandfather, his nephew, over. And Alias, that's my great-grandfather, married Jette, J-E-T-T-E, Gurnwald, capital G-U-R-N-W-A-L-D, and had, my grandfather was one of three children, and his name was Samson, S-A-M-S-O-N. And Samson came to the United States about 1850. And is the one that went to Buffalo to be with his Uncle David. And he died November 27, 1890, in Mississippi. And is buried in Mississippi. And after he met my grandmother on the boat, he married her in Mississippi. Now, Caroline Forshimer is my grandmother, C-A-R-O-L-I-N-E, capital F-O-R-S-C-H-E-I-M-E-R, and she was born July 15, 1836, in Affeltrach, that's capital A-F-F-A-L-T-R-A-C-H, which was the kingdom of Württemberg, capital W-U-R-T-T-E-M-B-E-R-G, in Germany. And she died January 13, 1912, in Canton, Mississippi, where she's buried. Her mother had the maiden name of Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H, and Uncle Hirsch, the brother of Caroline's mother, had come to Sallis, S-A-L-L-I-S, Mississippi, a few years before the Civil War. And he brought his nieces, Caroline and Nanny, and his nephew, Ben Forshimer, to this country. Now, my grandfather, Samson, who had gone down to Mississippi to marry his bride, apparently spoke five languages, and he used to teach the children of the plantation owners. And he married my grandmother in Greenwood, Mississippi, on June the 12th, 1860. And he had a woodyard in Winona, W-I-N-O-N-A, Mississippi. And when the railroad came through, they needed that wood, so they made him the station master in Winona, Mississippi. In the Civil War, my grandfather, Samson Wiener, was in the Confederate cavalry for Mississippi for 4 years and had a horse shot under him. And we have a record of it, that he had a horse shot. It's noted that a horse of S. Wiener was killed at Moscow, Mississippi, and left on the march, and he used a government horse on September 1st, 1863. And while he was in the Confederate Army, he was captured by the Union Army. There are two stories I've heard from different persons. Either he was released the same day in an exchange of prisoners, or his wife sold gold coins and the clothes she sent to the prison so he could bribe the guards. I don't know which one is true. Now, some of my grandparents' children were born. Most of them were born in Mississippi, but my father was born in Winona, Mississippi. My grandparents had 8 children, but they also adopted a boy who died from drowning before my father was born, because I was told by a cousin that my grandparents would have orphans from a Jewish orphan's home visit them, and that may be why they adopted this boy, but he died before my father was born. Then my father went to Shreveport to a wedding, Shreveport, Louisiana, and met my mother. I'll tell you about my mother in a few minutes. And he courted her she lived in Waco, Texas, and he lived in Texas. So his brothers were also courting her, but he said, ignore them, they don't live in Texas, I'm coming to Shreveport. And so he married my mother on November 21st, 1906, and they had the 4 children that I mentioned to you, Samson, Isabel, Carol, and myself, Selma. And I was born August 8, 1916, in Kelpies, Texas, where my father was with us all night. He was the president of it at the time. My mother's side of the family is the one I can trace back to 1680, because a cousin found some records and went over to Germany and took a picture of my great-grandfather's house. And I have that here, too, to show you. And her maiden name, as I said, was Lowenstein. And her parents were Isaac Lowenstein, and that he spelled that L-O-E-W-E-N-S-T-E-I-N, because apparently in Germany there was an umlaut over the O, and when they came to America they took off the umlaut and put the E in. And her mother was Caroline Neubauer Lowenstein. The Neubauers, I found out, I sent away for birth certificate, not a birth certificate, a naturalization paper. And apparently in 1850, my great-grandfather, whose name was Solomon Neubauer, and it was spelled the German way originally, N-E-U-B-A-U-E-R, but I found in the New York records in the public library in New York, printed Solomon Neubauer with N-E-U, and right under it, Solomon N-E-W-B-O-U-E-R, because he anglicized it. And he apparently, in this records book, it said that he was a Provia. But he was naturalized in 1850, and on it it said that the man who, if it was his witness, had known him for 5 years, so that would take us back to 1845, and beyond that I can't tell you anything. But he came to this country and married, met my grandmother, who was only 18. She had just been confirmed in Bethel Emanuel in New York. And a year after she was confirmed, she was married in a confirmation dress to my grandfather in New York City. And I had the address in New York, and I saw the house that they were married in, my great-grandparents' home. Her mother's name was Emma, E-M-M-A, Morse, M-A-A-S, Neubauer. And by that time, they were spelling it N-E-W-B-O-U-E-R. I think that was it. And she was one of many children. I have her portrait. If you want to see it, I have her portrait with one sister and two brothers, as they were children in New York, and all came.
On this wall, this weekend, she came in. Yes,
and she apparently was a beautiful woman and a beautiful child. She met my grandfather and married him, and they had 8 children. And my mother was the 7th of 8 daughters. They said my grandfather cried every time it was another girl. He wanted a boy so badly. And the 8th birth was twins, and the boy was stillborn. My mother told this story all her life. The boy was stillborn and the girl was alive. But she said maybe it's just as well. A boy with all those sisters, maybe it wouldn't have been so happy. But she was raised in, she was born in New York City. My grandfather, Isaac Lowenstein, was apparently very wealthy at that time. They had a German governess so that the children would speak German. And he was manufacturing artificial flowers for ladies' hats. And one night, I think his insurance policy had just run out, and he was to sign it the next day. And that night there was a fire in the factory, and they were poor the next day. And so mother said that the governess, German governess, left and they could speak English again. And, my grandfather was a vice president of the temple in Waco, Texas, and all his 8 daughters, his 8 beautiful daughters, I have a picture of them, were married in the temple in Waco, Texas. And in my mother's wedding Bible, I have the name of the rabbi and so forth. So Judaism was apparently important to both our families. And both sides of the family. My father used to say that when he was a little boy, they did observe Judaism, but they didn't have a temple where he was living. And my mother's side, they observed because they were active in the temple. My mother said she's surprised she never married a rabbi because my grandfather brought all the new rabbis home for dinner. And I guess he hoped one of the girls would marry one, but they didn't.
Do you have any knowledge of what motivated your first ancestors to come to this country?
That's what I tried to find out in doing some of the family history. And I couldn't find out what brought Solomon Neubauer, who was my great-grandfather, and he was the first one to come, because my grandmother was the only one of my grandparents who was born in this country. She was born in New York City. I don't know why he came, and I only know that my grandfather Samson Wiener was brought by his uncle. That was the custom of those days. A relative brought a younger person over. Now, some of them may have been brought because I've forgotten which one. It could be Samson Wiener. he was brought because in Germany in those days they put him in the army, and the Jewish boys didn't do very well in the army. So that may be why his family sent him over here. I don't really know.
How about the reason for their coming south, as opposed to staying in Buffalo or wherever?
Well, because my grandmother had been brought by her Uncle Hirsch, who lived in Sallis, Mississippi. And he brought her to Mississippi, and that's why my grandfather, Lena, went to Mississippi. Then the reason my grandfather, Lowenstein, went to Texas was because he had lost all his money in New York, and he had these seven little daughters. The eighth one was born in Waco, Texas. And he heard about a store, The Fashion was the name of it, a woman's store in Waco, Texas. And I don't know how he heard about it. He came down and bought the Fashion, and that's why he lived in Waco, even though my mother was born in New York.
How about your own life in the early years?
Well, as I said, I was the youngest of four, and we had moved to Shreveport. And my father was the president of the temple in Shreveport. We were raised classic reform. And my father was a president in Shreveport, and when we moved to Dallas in 1931, he became the president of the temple there. So apparently, our family was always interested in Judaism and in organized Judaism. And in Shreveport, my mother helped teach Sunday school, so she was one of my teachers in Sunday school. Dr. Abram Drill, B-R-I-L-L, was our rabbi, and he taught us. I learned a wee bit of Hebrew there, but not very much. I learned more at Robert Shores a few years ago when I was an adult, and I learned again. And he taught us a few customs that are interesting to think about since we were a classic reform congregation. He taught us not to sew on the Sabbath. He taught us not to write on the Sabbath, which is a conservative Orthodox viewpoint. But I remember coming to Pittsburgh and being surprised that in Temple we were asked to sign pledge cards for money, and that was not highest holy day, and I felt funny about writing because of that background. But I went to public schools in Shreveport, and as the youngest of four children, I had to live up to my sisters and brothers' reputations of doing well in school. And it was a very happy life there. We had servants, we had a chauffeur and maid and cook, but my parents were active in the community.
Were you confirmed?
Yes, I was confirmed by that time we had just moved to Dallas the year I was confirmed. We moved to Dallas in 1931, and so I joined the confirmation class at Temple Emmanuel in Dallas. Dr. David Lefkowitz was our rabbi.
That's all right. No, leave it go. That's perfectly all right. We find it easier rather than turning it off
And I had a happy childhood, and in Dallas, going over and meeting everyone in my confirmation class, we all became close to each other. And then I finished my last year of high school was in Dallas. I graduated from high school at the age of 15. Only because in the South they only had 11 grades, and they skipped you easily.
Let me back up just a little bit and talk a little more about your school days, your friends, teachers, the attitudes in school, and the subjects you took, and that sort of thing.
Well, if you want to talk about the Judaism part, we always stayed home for Jewish holidays. I remember one time I had a cold, and a Christian friend said, "Was that another Jewish holiday?" But she stayed home. But we were well accepted as Jewish people in the South. And I think my father belonged to the Bnei Brith in Shreveport. And we went to Friday night services every Friday night. I can still remember as a small child going to temple with my parents on Saturday morning or Friday night. And my mother would slip me lifesavers to keep me quiet. So I say that my going to temple often here relates way back to that. I learned early. It's all a matter of habit. But we were, as I said, close to our Judaism, and we had a lot of aunts and uncles and cousins in Shreveport. So we were surrounded by family. My mother had three sisters living there, my father had a brother living there. So with their families, we grew up with a lot of cousins. I had 32 first cousins all over the country. But being among the youngest in the family, I didn't know all of them that well.
I sensed that anti-Semitism was not a large factor in your personal life.
Not in my personal life. In Shreveport, Louisiana, it was a hotbed of a Ku Klux Klan. I wasn't allowed to play with the little boy who lived at the end of the block because he was suspected, no one knew, that his father was a Ku Klux Klan. They didn't know because they wore sheets. But Shreveport was a hotbed of Ku Klux Klan in the 20s. See, I was born in 1916. So in the 20s, there was a lot going on in anti-Semitism.
How do you contrast, if you can, life in the South as opposed to Pittsburgh in general, or specifically for Jews, or however?
Well, we always felt very proud of our faith in Shreveport. And that's a fairly small town, but it's not a country town. It was bigger than Kelty's or Lucky. Going back to Kelty's, where I was born, my parents used to observe the high holidays with a Jewish couple from Lufkin, which was just 10 miles away, and they would read the prayer book together. That was their organized religion on the high holidays. But in Shreveport, we had a temple. That's why we were so close to it. I personally never felt any anti-Semitism. I had Christian and Jewish friends in the schools. One of my best friends, I have a picture here as a child, was a Christian girl. Another girl's father was a judge, a Christian judge. We all mixed freely. My father's friends and my mother's friends were both Christian and Jewish. And my father's partners at the sawmill were all Christian.
Were the Jewish communities in Shreveport or in Texas large enough to maintain more than one congregation?
No, no. Oh yes, well, ours was, in Shreveport, was B'nai Zion, and capital B-N-A-I-N, capital Z-I-O-N. There were also Orthodox. I don't remember whether they were conservative, but I know they were Orthodox. And Celtics, of course, had none. We moved to Dallas in 31. That had moved on to the Temple Emmanuel, and that was reformed.
What was the reason for the move to Dallas, you know?
I don't remember. My father decided to go over to Dallas, and that's when I was a senior in high school.
What was the relationship between the congregations?
I don't know. It wasn't like in the North. Here, every organization I belong to has Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform. There, the people we happen to know most were the Reform.
Okay. How about your adolescent years?
They were all happy ones. As the youngest child, we traveled a lot in the summertime without air conditioning in the South. My father was able to take 2 months off, and we would get in the car and had a chauffeur, and we would drive to Colorado where it was cool. And we would spend 2 months in Colorado or wherever they wanted to spend. We spent quite a few summers in Colorado. We were also traveling around the country.
Did you have specific hobbies and other recreations?
Yes, I collected stamps. And I just recently gave my stamp collections to one of my grandchildren. And another 5-year-old grandchild, I've been sending stamps to. I tear them off letters. And she's just learning to write, so we write. I print my letters to her. And she loves her stamp collection, MPT collection, K-O, I've forgotten how she spells it, but she does it phonetically. And so we write about the stamps. So that carried through, thank goodness. And I played the violin, forgot to tell you. From the age of 8, I played the violin. I just gave my 3/4 size and my larger violin for another grandchild.
Were you involved in community activities, organizations, or?
As a child, no. I personally wasn't. We didn't have some of the Jewish youth groups like they have now.
Okay. Did the Jewish teenagers of the community congregate informally?
Yes, I remember at the age of 13 in Shreveport, the girlfriends would all get together on a Saturday afternoon and would do things together. And that's when the movies, we go to a movie, and I remember when the first talkies came out with Al Jolson, and we would all go down to the movie to see that.
All right, how about education after high school?
I graduated from Dallas High School, Highland Park High School, in 1932. And went away. My two sisters, because we lived in Louisiana before we moved to Dallas, my two sisters had graduated from Sophie Newcomb College in New Orleans, which is part of Tulane University. So it was automatically taken for granted that I would go there. And I went my first 2 years to Sophie Newcomb College in New Orleans, and then transferred to Wellesley, in Wellesley, Massachusetts, and it opened a new world for me. It emancipated a young Southerner, a very young Southerner, because I was 19 when I graduated from Wellesley, and most of my classmates were 21. So it emancipated a very young Southerner and taught me a new world.
Specifically?
I feel that the South is more protected. Up here you learn to, I don't know exactly what I mean, I just know that I was different after I went east to college.
What was your major?
I majored in psychology. And I learned that all psychology is common sense and patience. I graduated from Wellesley in 1936, and I went back to Dallas, and I taught nursery school for a while, not too long. I got engaged in the middle of it, and I worked up to where I met my husband and so forth pretty soon.
Any honors or awards?
No, I was a transfer student, and it was enough to learn new ways of doing things at Wellesley.
Any influential professors?
Most of them were influential. No one that guided me in a career.
How did you feel about your Jewishness when you were up north?
No problem.
No problem.
No problem. The temple in Boston always gave a tea for new students, and I met a lot of Jewish people there from the community. And we had some contacts, and they always had us over. We always went to services on the high holidays, but I did learn one thing. This was at Newcomb as well as at Wellesley. The college does not circulate around the Jewish holidays. I would have exams scheduled, or I had something important that I'd have to change, but I always changed it because it was important to go to the services. And we would go into, I think it was in Brookline out of Boston, but we went to the temple. I'd try to fast, and I'd go home and study properly.
So you kept your Jewishness very much. You did.
And my rooming area friends were all Jewish.
Okay. Can we jump to courtship and marriage, or is there something between college and courtship and marriage that you'd like to speak about?
Well, nothing that I can say. I'll go back to it if I think of it. My husband graduated from Harvard Law School the same year I graduated from Wellesley, but we never met. He took some of my friends out, so I heard his name. And I remember, well, he lived in an apartment building that one of my dates had lived in. And I remember seeing the Pittsburgh Press addressed to Alan H. Berkman, but I didn't know there'd be a missus in front of that someday. And we still didn't meet until 2 months after graduation. 2 weeks past my 20th birthday on August 22nd, 1936, a friend of mine who had gone to Harvard Law School called me. And this particular boy always called me at the last minute and asked for a date. And I always said, I'm sorry, I'm busy. I said, you really want a date? Call earlier. But he always called last minute. Well, this particular Saturday, he called and I wasn't busy. And he said, are you busy tonight? And I said, no, and because I'm not busy, I'll go out with you. And he said, no, I have a friend in town. I said, I'm not interested in a blind date. And he told me who it was, and I said, well, I do know who that is, so I'll do you a favor, I'll go out with him, because I knew who it was. And we dated with two other couples, and we went out, and the next morning, Alan called the house. I should go back to the night he walked in, and I'd never met him before, and my mother was at the front door with me. And he put his arm around my mother fell in love with him immediately. So from then on, she was for Alan. So the next morning when he called to say, could he see me again, my mother said, invite him for breakfast. And in the South, you have to appreciate this, she had leftover lamb chops, so he had a lamb chop. And she had brains and eggs. I don't think you've ever eaten that. That's calf's brains, scrambled with eggs, it's delicious. That's a Southern dish, I guess. And I think he thought he would eat that way the rest of his life. I think that's why he fell in love with me, but he didn't. And so he came out the next day, And the next night, we went out together with my brother and my sister. And then he started taunting me long distance. I told him when I married him, I really didn't know him that well. It was all long distance. But it's lasted almost 50 years, so I guess it's true romance. So he had just graduated from law school, as I said. And he tried to come down whenever he could to get to see me again. And we finally got engaged in October of 1937. And then we were married on March 20th, 1938. And he brought me to Pittsburgh. And I think one reason, all the people in Pittsburgh who have never left Pittsburgh, all my friends here, said, how could you leave your family and your friends and travel to a strange city? I think that the fact that I went away to college and that I went to camp, I forgot to tell you about my camp experiences in Maine. The fact that I went away to camp, I think that does emancipate you to a certain extent. So I was able to adjust. I was almost 22, I was 21 when I married. And so I came to Pittsburgh and everyone was good to me here. Everyone was very friendly and very kind. You want me to go back to the camp experience?
Yes.
It was a Jewish camp, Camp Winona, W-E-N-O-N-A-H, in Naples, Maine. And I went there when I was 12 and 13, 1929, 1930. And my older sister, who was 16, also went with me. Now, we were old to go to camp, but most people start at the age of 10 or so. But a cousin, my cousin of Benavina in Shreveport, who'd been raised in Buffalo and had Eastern ideas, knew about this camp and convinced my parents that it was important to send us to a camp. My parents had felt that anyone who sent their children to camp was trying to get rid of them.